there's just a million ways people self-sabotage. But I mean, ultimately, the root of self-sabotage really comes down to a fear. And the fear is that you don't feel like your life will actually be better than it is.
Hello, my fellow humans, and welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Happy Human Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Levitin. On today's episode, I talk to Adam Gilbert. Adam is the founder of My Body Tutor, a program that simplifies the weight loss process into practical, sustainable behaviors that help you lose weight and keep it off. Adam has made a career out of working with clients who have tried everything, but just haven't managed to keep the weight off. Since 2007, he's built My Body Tutor into the world's top daily accountability program. You'll hear more about it in the episode, but I actually believed in My Body Tutor so much when I first discovered their website that I reached out to Adam and asked for a job, and have been working for My Body Tutor as one of their nutrition coaches, their nutrition tutors, for going on 2 years now. So if that tells you anything about how much I believe in My Body Tutor and believe in what he's created, that's my vote of confidence. As for you, if you or someone you know has struggled with weight loss in the past, if anyone that you know has felt like, I've tried everything, but I just can't get it to stick, or is always saying, this is going to be my year, this is going to be the time, this is going to be the diet that I finally stick to, and I finally lose the weight, and I finally get that healthy lifestyle that I've been looking for, this is the episode for you. This episode is going to change people's lives. So if you know anyone that struggled with weight, if you know anyone that struggles with consistency in their diet and their healthy habits, please take a second to send this episode to them, because this could be the impetus for them to really create that healthy change in their life. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to let Adam do the talking, and I will see you guys on the other side. Please enjoy this conversation with Adam Gilbert. I've been super looking forward to this conversation because, you know, I have personally been with My Body Tutor for almost over a year and a half, going on 2 years now, which is crazy to think. And I know that not everyone who's going to be listening is familiar with My Body Tutor, but the way I want to start this is just for you to give like a brief 5-minute elevator pitch of who you are and what My Body Tutor does and what makes it different than what's out there.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you know, ultimately, when I started My Body Tutor in 2007, my belief then, and it remains true now, is that, you know, a lack of knowledge isn't so much the real issue. The real issue is a lack of consistency, right? For the most part, we know what to do. We know what's good for us. We know what's not good for us. The real question is, why can't we do it? And, you know, I started my career at Ernst & Young. I was there for 2 years. I was always the go-to guy for health and fitness. Health and fitness has always just been a huge passion of mine. You know, quickly, my, you know, father was very sick when I was younger. He had a heart attack when I was in seventh grade, and then had a triple bypass surgery. And shortly after that, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So seeing him deteriorate mentally and physically throughout the years until he passed away was really, really hard. And that spurred my passion for health and fitness. So, you know, when I was at Ernst & Young, you know, I was always the go-to guy, as I was saying. And, you know, I realized there was a huge opportunity, because I would give people diet and exercise plans, and they would always love the plan, but they were never able to stick with it. And I realized that the missing part was the follow through, right? The sticking with it. And that's where the idea for My Body Tutor was born. So I quit my full-time job in 2007. I started My Body Tutor. And the idea is that we devise a diet and exercise plan for you, one that's catered to you, one that's customized to you, one that's based on the preferences, your preferences, one that's based on the realities of your life. And then most importantly, we help you stick with it day in and day out. So the way we're different from, I think, the billion other companies out there is for several reasons. Number one, we're holding you accountable on a daily basis. So every single day you're entering your food and exercise into our mobile app or website. And then the following day, one of our coaches is personally writing back to you. So, you know, the fact that we're in communication with you every single day, guiding you, supporting you, holding you accountable, makes all the difference. Take a very head-first approach, meaning, you know, again, as I was saying, for the most part, we know what to do. The real question is, why can't we do it? And so much of that is what's going on between our ears, right? As we like to call it, your MPH, M for mindset, P for psychology, and H for habits. So we really focus on that, focus on helping you change your mindset, helping you change your psychology and habits. Because when you do, it takes willpower out of the equation, right? If you think back to the last diet you tried, you know, typically day one is easier than day 20 if you even make it that far. You know, but when you actually change your relationship with food and you change your mindset and psychology, it really gets easier and easier as time goes on. And that's the idea. The goal is to make My Body Tutor, the last program you ever do. This is my lifelong passion. This is way more than a business for me. This is my life's work. You know, we have an incredible team of coaches. You're one of them. Pretty much what we do, why we do it, and, you know, how I got started.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love that. And just for the people listening, you know, as I said, when we intro'd this, that I've been working for My Body Tutor as a tutor, a coach, whatever you want to call it, for nearly 2 years now. And the way I found you guys was I heard Brendan Turner on Bigger Pockets, which is, one of the biggest real estate podcasts in the world. And he was talking about My Body Tutor. And, you know, being that I had been in the health and the nutrition space for a long time, I always look into these things, right? I'm always like, okay, what are other people doing I want to look at these other companies and look at what's out there. And I went to the My Body Tutor website and I started reading your blog, Adam, and your blog posts. And I was just like, oh, like this guy gets it. You know, like this is how it's supposed to be. Everything that you just said, for anyone who listens to this podcast regularly, knows that this is exactly the stuff that I think needs to be talked about, right? Exactly that. We all know that we shouldn't be eating McDonald's every day. We all know that Coca-Cola, you know, by the 20 ounce is bad for us, and yet it's delicious. And that leaves me at a very hard impasse. So, you know, my question then becomes, you just said that we know what to do, but consistency is the thing that we need. And I wholeheartedly agree. My one word for the year 2021 was consistency. My coach challenged me to choose a word to bring into this year. And consistency was my word. So I do think that's the most important thing. So my question for you is, why is it so hard to be consistent? If that's the answer, just like, oh, just be consistent. Why do we find that to be such a challenge?
Sure. I mean, answering that question is truly what My Body Tutor is all about. And I boil it down to three reasons. The first reason is that the diets that we try to follow are not sustainable, right? We can only follow a cookie diet or a shake diet or a lettuce diet or a no carb diet or, you know, whatever the popular diet of the month or year is for so long. And it might sound like common sense, but it's not common practice, because so often we start in these crazy diets, you know, and we're doomed for failure. So the first reason why consistency is so hard is that the diet you follow, the meal plan you follow, the food plan you follow must be sustainable, right? It must be something that you can stick with for the rest of your life. Because if it's something you're saying, oh, I can't wait till this is over, or I can't wait till this month is over, or whatever, like obviously by definition, it's not sustainable. So the first reason is that the diet you're trying to follow isn't sustainable. The second reason is that we never change, as I was saying, your MPH, right? So most people go on what I call a food diet, where the only thing that changes is the food they're eating. But if the only thing changing is the food you're eating, you're not going to change for the long term. It's really critical that you change your MPH, your mindset, your psychology, your habits. Because when you do, again, it takes willpower out of the equation. And that's the idea, right? We've all started diets, raring to go day one. You know, we're all excited by day 20. We're hanging on by the skin of our teeth. But when you change your mindset, psychology, habits, your relationship with food, ultimately what's going on between your ears, it's a game changer, changes everything. And then last but not least, in terms of why consistency is so hard, is a lack of accountability. Without accountability, it's too easy to make excuses. It's too easy to rationalize to ourselves during and after a long day. And that's why we offer it on a daily basis. So it's the answer to the question, because I believe consistency is the most important thing as well. And if consistency is so easy, but like it's so simple, just be consistent, but it's extremely hard, you know, and answering that question is the thesis and the basis for My Body Tutor. Our goal is to be the number one company in the world for helping people stay consistent. And, you know, it's through a combination of coming up with a plan that's catered to you, helping you change your mindset and psychology and habits, and then of course, holding you accountable on a daily basis.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Obviously, you know, simple is not easy. And you brought up a few times already willpower. And I'm actually, you can't see me right now. No one listening can see me either, but I actually have right sitting next to me on my desk, when you brought that up, the book Willpower Doesn't Work. That's the title of the book by Benjamin Hardy. I'm not sure if you've heard of this book before, but mm-hmm. You can surmise by the name what the gist of it is. So my question for you, because again, I hear this all the time, people go, well, you know, I just don't have willpower. I just need to work on my willpower. I just need more willpower and then everything will be okay. So what is the problem with people just relying on willpower? And, you know, why isn't that the answer?
Yeah, well, I mean, a perfect example is, you know, gyms, right? Gyms are, you know, usually packed in early January, right? They're packed in early January, and by the end of January, early February, they're empty again. And that's because everyone was all excited. They were kind of using willpower to, gear themselves up and go. And then it ran out. And ultimately the problem with willpower is that it's fleeting, right? It doesn't last. It's like motivation. It just doesn't last. You know, there has to be something else besides willpower. And that's what we teach our clients.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, I think a big thing that people have to get past is that willpower is fleeting just like anything else. And I feel like people look for these things, motivation, willpower, discipline is another one that people are just like, oh, well, I just need that. And the reason that brings me pause, I used to say that to my clients. It's like, well, you just need more willpower. But then I understand that that's not an actual solution, right? But something like having a system with accountability actually brings us an answer to those questions, rather than just saying, well, I need more willpower, but like, how do I get more willpower? Well, I need more discipline. Well, it's like, how do I get more discipline? So, you know, I think accountability is definitely the missing piece of the puzzle that many people have. But even people who have accountability, and clients in My Body Tutor and anyone else that's on the face of the planet, probably can understand when I say that people can have everything, including the answers, and they still tend to self-sabotage, right? They still tend to do exactly the opposite of whatever it is that they say that they want to be doing, right? They could hire My Body Tutor, pay the whatever, have a coach, and then they stop doing the thing. Then they say, oh my gosh, this is whatever, you know? And like, in reality, it's us getting in our own way. And I do it to myself all the time. So in your experience, what have you seen as like, why is it that people tend to self-sabotage? What is the thing that's stopping them? If they say that they want the thing, right? If I say like, I really want to lose weight, but I keep self-sabotaging myself to stop myself from losing weight, what is the disconnect there?
Listen, we all have this duality, right? We all have this part of us, this short-term irrational mind that wants pleasure, that wants the cookies, that wants the McDonald's, that wants whatever it might be, versus this long-term rational mind, right? Where our goals are, our dreams are, our, you know, aspirations for a better life are. And we're constantly facing this battle, right? It's this internal battle we all face. It's our short-term irrational mind versus our long-term rational mind. You know, we self-sabotage for, you know, countless reasons. It could be, you know, and there's ways we do it, right? It could be, you know, all or nothing thinking, you know, fear of failure, fear of success, which is surprising. There's just a million ways people self-sabotage. But I mean, ultimately, the root of self-sabotage really comes down to a fear. And the fear is that you don't feel like your life will actually be better than it is. And, you know, to kind of go into it a little more, you know, let's use a small business owner, for example, right? A small business owner who has the best intentions, they want to serve people. But, you know, every small business owner in the world typically feels like they have a lot of responsibility. They have all the weight of the world on their shoulders and they have very little free time. So, you know, a small business owner who wants to become a medium business or a large business, you know, they might buy books, they might buy courses, they might get coaches, they might, you know, invest in all sorts of things. But on some level, a small business owner thinks, well, the busier I get, the worse my life is going to be because the less free time I'm going to have. Because they already think they have no free time. And they're like, wow, if I get busier, I'm going to have really no free time. So until a small business owner creates the systems and the processes and has the people in place to grow, to scale, to serve more people, there's going to be constantly this self-sabotage. So now if you bring it to weight loss, for so many of us, we feel like, well, sure, I want to lose weight. I want to have a great body, all these great things. But on some level, there's a part of you that's like, well, I don't want to be in the gym for hours a day. I don't want to work out for hours a day. I don't want to give up my favorite foods. I don't want to be that guy or girl, right? There's all sorts of rationalizations we come up and, you know, reasonings and justifications we come up with. And until you work through those, you're going to continue to self-sabotage.
Yeah, I think that's such an amazing point. So can we expand on that a little bit? What do you do if that's the case? If I have that dichotomy, as I said in my head, it's like, yes, I want the fit body, but I don't want to give up the time with my friends and do the cookies at Christmas time and all that stuff. Or again, they're the small business owners. Like, I need to be busy to have a successful business. Well, the whole point of having a successful business is to not be busy.
Right. So I think that, you know, we typically do, you know, a an exercise with our clients, and it's essentially, tell me five reasons why you don't think your life will be better off, right? So I would say, tell me five reasons why you don't think your life will be better off when you lose the weight, when you reach your health and fitness goal. Then I'll ask, tell me five reasons or ways your life will be better, because it's important to see how it will be better, but it's also important to identify the reasons why you don't think it's better. That's where the meat is, so to speak. And then the key thing is challenging those beliefs and assumptions, because they almost always are beliefs and assumptions. They're not actually fact. So again, a typical belief or assumption is, well, I'll never be able to have a drink again, or I'm going to have to constantly work out, or I'm never going to be able to enjoy my favorite foods. And those are all beliefs and assumptions we come up with. Because again, one of our brain's job is to protect ourselves, and it's, you know, homeostasis and kind of remain the same, right? There's a huge aversion to change. So when you identify the delusions we tell ourselves and the assumptions, and you challenge them, it becomes much easier to push through them and move past them.
Yeah, I think that that's so powerful. The whole thing about stories, and is this a real thing, or is it just a thought that I have? And I learned this when I was a personal trainer for many years, and I would have this conversation with people exactly that, where they would just say, well, I know it's like this. They'd go, I know that I'm not supposed to eat bagels. I was like, well, how do you know that? You know, we have these things in our heads that are just kind of there, these thoughts that have been implanted either by others or by marketing, or there, it's this weird telephone game of, I heard this from someone who heard this from her, who heard this from someone else. And it just kind of exists. And those are the things that drive our life, because as you said, if I have this thought of, well, I'm never going to be able to have a fun life if I'm eating healthy, because eating healthy means never going out for dinner with my friends, and it means that spending 2 hours in the gym every day, then of course I'm not going to associate that with something positive. So once you have that list of like, okay, there's five things that are not good about eating healthy. I like that exercise a lot, right? So it's like, let's assume you're right, right? That what are the five reasons not to change, right? Is the thing that you're talking about. Yeah. And I have that list, and it's like, okay, there's five reasons that I don't want to eat healthy. It's that I'm never going to be able to drink alcohol again. It's that I'm going to have to miss social events with my friends. It's that, you know, I can't have late night munchies when I feel like it. And it's that, you know, McDonald's is the best thing on the earth, and something else. What do I do with that list afterwards to now like to make a change?
Yeah. So the first thing is identifying all the assumptions and beliefs, right? Because again, the truth is you can still have McDonald's. You can still go out with your friends. You can still have your favorite food. And for so many people, like you said, I mean, we create these stories in our head. That's just what it is, though. That's just what they are. They're stories, right? I equate it to, you know, it's kind of like having this devil on your shoulder. Like, we all have this inner voice, right? The inner voice can be like, you know, YOLO, you only live once. Go for the cookie, skip the workout, you know, watch Netflix. There's all these things that this inner voice is telling us. And I think the job of a great coach is to bring out this other inner voice, right? I kind of, you know, I joke, it's like having Rocky on your shoulder, or Rocky as your inner voice, like the Rocky music. And imagine you were listening to that kind of stories, you know, those types of positive stories versus the other stories we typically tell ourselves. So, you know, once you kind of identify these roadblocks, and they're mental roadblocks, right? So you're going down a street, you're driving, there's a huge roadblock, you have to go around the other way, or there's no way through. We have these mental roadblocks as well. And until you identify them, you can't move past them. And for many, once you identify them, that itself is a huge aha moment and allows them to be consistent, because they've realized, you know what, all these stories, these I was telling myself, all these rationalizations are just that, just, you know, beliefs I had that are not true. They're ultimately limiting beliefs, you know. And again, the job of a great coach is to identify them and help people move past them.
I definitely agree with that last bit, that's what the point of a coach is, right? When I have my first conversation with a new client, that's exactly how I explain it. I go, the way I explain it is that my job is to just help you when these roadblocks come, because there's going to be, this is a journey, right? And there's going to be speed bumps and roadblocks, and there's going to be trees down, and there's going to be all these things that would normally knock people off. And they're going to go, oh, this is, can't figure this out. And then that's when they quit. All that the job of a good coach is to help you see past these things, help you get around these roadblocks, and help you not stumble over them so that you can continue on your journey. So that, you know, that's how I see the coaching relationship. And the question I have right now, as of recording this, we're about a week ahead of Thanksgiving, right? Which for better or for worse is a huge thing on people's minds, especially when it comes to eating and just in general with, you know, there's life, there's family, all this stuff, you know, that the holidays bring up a whole mess of emotions. So when we're talking about stories and roadblocks that people bring up, what are some common ones that you've seen specifically around the holidays?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest one is that, you know, Thanksgiving becomes the start of this downward spiral, and it becomes very easy to say, you know what, screw it, I'll start fresh in the new year. And the truth is, Thanksgiving is one meal. It's one meal. It's not a big deal. The challenge is when we let it become a whole weekend or a whole week or a whole month, right? So that's the biggest one, is we let one meal derail us and we think, you know, it's the end of the world. It's just one meal. It's not that big a deal. And for some people, they're like, sure, that makes sense. But for some people, that's a very empowering thought, because they let one meal derail them, right? It's this whole idea, if I can't be perfect, then why bother? But, you know, chasing perfection is like, it's like chasing the wind. You're never going to catch it. And what does perfect even mean? The goal is to be focused on progress, not perfection, and recover right away. So that's the biggest one, you know, is really letting one meal turn into, you know, a whole weekend or a whole week or a whole month of, you know, indulgent eating.
For sure. I mean, obviously perfectionism, I think it's very hard for me to say what is the number one thing that people struggle with, but perfectionism has to be up there, because exactly that. It's like, well, I already messed up for today and it's Thursday, so now I might as well just wait for the weekend to start on Monday. And now it's like, well, it's almost Christmas, so I might as well just wait. And it's this whole thought spiral. But, you know, my question then is, I've been thinking about this a lot personally with my clients and with myself. And it's just like the whole thing about Thanksgiving and holidays in general. And like, why is it that we feel the need to even be like that? Right. Like that comes from somewhere as well. Like, why is it that I feel that Thanksgiving is something that it's like my obligation almost to eat more and then beat myself up about it? Right. You know, when I worked at the gym, the Friday after Thanksgiving was the busiest day of the year, because everyone would come in wanting to work off their Thanksgiving turkey or whatever, you know, and everyone was just, and they're punishing themselves. So it's like, why do we even feel the need to do something that we are also going to feel the need to punish ourselves for?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I think there's, you know, decades, you know, depending on how old you are, of conditioning and marketing at work here. Right. I mean, we're just so used to stuffing ourselves on Thanksgiving and the classic passing out on the couch after watching some football. You know, that's what we've seen on shows and the movies. And, you know, you just kind of, it becomes kind of ingrained in our culture. I think going against that is very hard. However, I think what you can change, and you certainly can, you know, listen, no one is forcing us to gorge ourselves and, you know, overeat. But I think the real work and the real opportunity is in the afterward, right? Is in focusing on what I like to call fact versus fiction, right? So let's just say you overate on Thanksgiving. You know, the fact is you overate on Thanksgiving. Maybe you had some more, you know, mashed potatoes or more gravy or more cake or whatever it is than you intended to. That's a fact. The fiction is where we get into the trouble, right? So the fiction is, oh, I have no discipline. I should have ate less. I can never stick with anything I set my mind to. I never follow through. That's all fiction. I always encourage my clients to focus on the facts. The fact is you ate more food than you wanted to. That's it. It's you ate more than you want to. That's it. That's the fact. Everything else is fiction. When you focus on the facts, it becomes much easier to recover. And that's the opportunity, because I think changing the way we approach a holiday, while certainly would be wonderful, I think that's much harder than changing what's going on between our ears.
100%. You're right there. The fact versus fiction thing is a huge, huge one. And people just adopting that mindset or that thought process of being like, hold on, what am I thinking right now? Is this real or is this just something that I made up? And I think that, yeah, fighting against decades of programmed whatever, for better or for worse, is not to say it's impossible, but, you know, we want to always take easy wins. And that's exactly. Is the opposite of an easy win. But I also do think it's interesting. You know, I always point this out to my clients when they have a day like that. And, or again, it doesn't have to be Thanksgiving, any day about eating, because there's a weird thing with eating or any type of habits where we do it and then feel bad afterwards. And that's always the thing to me. I'm like, if you gorge yourself on Thanksgiving and then the next day you say, I feel so good. I had a great day with my family. I ate so much tasty food and that was an amazing day for me. And that we made so many memories and I laughed and I fell asleep early and it was a great day. I would never in a million years say that that's a bad thing for you. But when you're doing something and you're and the next day you're going, ugh, I ate so much. I felt sick and I didn't sleep well. And like, I'm and now I know that I just, you know, I just backtracked on a week of progress because I actually ate 10,000 calories or something like that. And I'm just like, well, then you know what the thing is, you know, you're telling yourself that that was not the best thing for you. Your body is telling you, right? Just listening to your body. So how can I, if after the fact, I know what the right thing is to do, how do I get to make that decision before the fact?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot of it also is about expectations and intentions, right? So for me, you know, I plan to overeat on Thanksgiving. Like that to me is something I enjoy doing. Everyone, you know, it's all about your expectations and your intentions. If you intend on eating a salad at dinner and then you wind up having pizza at dinner, you're going to feel bad because you're not following through on your intentions. And when your actions and intentions are not in alignment, unhappiness ensues. And when your actions and intentions are in alignment, you will feel great. You will feel satisfied, accomplished, and happy. So to me, it's a question of what your intentions are and also making sure they're realistic given the environment you're in, whether it's Thanksgiving or, you know, a dinner out with friends or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. 2 points I want to touch on right there as we kind of start to wrap up maybe is that one, the environment piece. I think that that's so huge that that can't be overstated. I think that people don't understand the power of the environment. So I want to come back to that, but I like what you said about the intent being the key indicator. And to me, I say the same thing, but I say it as control, right? It's like you just said, if I planned on eating a salad and then I end up eating a whole pizza pie, I feel like I lost control. And that's a bad feeling. We like to be in control as humans. Whereas if I say, okay, I'm going to have a whole pizza and I'm going to enjoy it, and that was the plan from the beginning, then it's like, at least that was a decision. And that was me being in the driver's seat. So I think that that's a huge difference maker. And again, that goes back to what you just said about like, this is my plan. I want to do this, but that means I can feel good about it afterwards. And if you feel good about it afterwards, I think that's all that we need to know, right? Because most people who come to my body tutor, who come to a personal trainer, who come to a doctor, who come to any person like that are not feeling good, right? Like for better or for worse, most people are coming to my body tutor saying, I don't like something about my body, my life, my habits, my something or other, and I want to change something. So that is the first clue that something needs to change. And that's, I think, all we really need to know when we think, because people will say like, oh, well, I don't know if I'm doing things right. And I'm kind of like, but we do if we listen to ourselves, you know?
For sure. I think that's a really good, important point. Like, listen, if you're happy and you're feeling in control, and I think control for sure is it's a key word. And absolutely, people come to us and they feel out of control around food, right? They want to feel in control. But to your point, if you're feeling happy, if you're feeling in control, then great. But if you're feeling bad, then that, like you said, that's an indicator that something's out of alignment, that you're not feeling in control, that you're not following through on your intentions. And again, when your intentions and actions are not in alignment, you're going to feel bad. And to me, that's a compass of sorts, right? It lets you know that you need to make changes. Otherwise, you're going to continue to feel the way you do.
Yeah, I love that. I love that bit about it being a compass. That's exactly right. That's you put that perfectly. So my last question then, not my last question, second to last, is about environment, like you just said. So how do you explain an environment to people? Because again, I think this is the piece in that book that I just mentioned, Willpower Doesn't Work. This is basically the thesis of his entire argument, spoiler alert, is that willpower doesn't work and that the way we create real change is environment. So how do you get people to understand how important their environment is and what are the changes that you have people start to make if they want to take control of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is my life's work. I've been at this since 2007, been passionate about health and fitness since I was probably in fourth grade. No joke. If there's ice cream in my house, if there's cookies in my house, it is very, very, very hard for me not to eat them. I can eat endless amounts of cookies. I love ice cream. It's like my favorite thing in the world. And this is my life's work. right? That's the power of willpower. The point is, if I don't have ice cream and cookies in the house, I don't have to think about it. It's much, much harder for me to eat ice cream or cookies if it's not in my house. And, you know, I think there's been so many books about willpower and basically just trashing willpower, but ultimately willpower is effective. The key thing is using it in small bursts, right? So we all have a limited amount of willpower. We all have a limited amount of self-control. The idea is to use it to create situations where you don't need self-control or willpower. Let's say you wake up, you're feeling raring to go, or it's a Monday, you're feeling excited. When you're feeling that, and we, again, as we touched on earlier, we know that's a fleeting feeling, but when you're feeling it, use it, right? So when you're feeling it, you know, go to the grocery store, buy some healthy foods, buy some healthy snacks, get rid of the temptations at home, make your environment as friendly as possible, or as conducive, make it as healthy as you want it to be, right? Because the idea is to make it hard to do the things you don't want to do and easy to do the things you want to do. And that's an example of using limited willpower and using it in short bursts to create an environment where you don't need it. And the idea of environment is, listen, you know, we are, you know, when we have temptations around, and my definition of a temptation is anything that makes us think irrationally, right? So as I said, we have a short-term irrational mind versus a long-term rational mind. You know, we can wake up, we can be, you know, raring to go, where I got this, I feel good. And then if you put cookies and ice cream in front of me, that's going to go out the window, right? So you want to remove temptations from your environment.
Exactly. Like you said, I don't think that willpower doesn't exist. I think that people overly rely on it as if it is some panacea or some cure-all. Whereas, as you said, it's more of a thing that does exist, but in fleeting doses. And one, we don't get to choose when that is. Usually it is in the morning, in the beginning of the week. Most people, I say all the time, I've never heard of someone tell me that they woke up at 10 a.m. and binged on ice cream and Oreos. Almost never do I hear anyone say like Monday night or Monday is like the day I skip the gym. It's always nighttime is when I binge. It's always towards the end of the week is when I get off my routine. So we can kind of take that and assume that there are places and times in our life when we have a little bit higher willpower. And like you said, use that to control our environment and make the easier and make the hard harder. Is that what you said?
Yeah. You want to make it easy to do good and hard to do bad, you know, if that's how you label it.
Yeah. I don't like labeling things like that, but I get what you mean. And I do. Yeah. I think it's right. You know, awesome. I think that that's super powerful. And if people walk away with nothing but just that about getting a little bit more control of their environment, I think that that will help a ton of people. So my last question that I ask every guest is just to leave listeners with one action step that they can start right now to start living a healthier, happier life.
Great question. My one action step would be to pause before you eat. Ask yourself, am I hungry or am I eating to change the way I feel? Because so much of the eating we do is emotional hunger. We're eating to change the way we feel. We're not actually physically hungry. So I would encourage you to pause before you eat and identify if it's actually physical hunger or emotional hunger. And, you know, a good test to determine if it's emotional versus physical. Emotional hunger typically craves specific foods. You want something, you know, X, Y, or Z, whereas physical hunger, you know, I call it the broccoli test. The idea is, you know, if broccoli or any raw vegetable doesn't seem appealing, then you're not actually hungry for food. You're hungry for something else. Stress relief, a distraction, an escape, pleasure, et cetera.
Wow, that's so powerful. And that is so actionable. I think that that will, again, change people's lives. So I think that that's a great one. And that is my favorite of the My Body Tutor habits that we teach. That is my favorite one that I recommend first to every single client. And I think it is the most powerful. And simply that will be able to change a lot of people's thoughts and feelings around food. So I think that that's a great place to leave this. One last thing, Adam, is just where do people find you on the internet if they want to learn more about you, if they want to learn more about My Body Tutor?
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, mybodytutor.com, we have, you know, all sorts of great stuff there. You know, we have a bunch of articles. We have a free course. You can find me on the socials. I'm mostly active on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook too. You know, and I love hearing from people. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. You know, this is, besides my family, this is truly what I live for.
To everyone listening, I wholeheartedly agree with Adam, everything he does. Like I said, I went just as to look at the blog. And I fell in love and emailed him that day and said, hey, I want to work with you guys because I love what you're doing. And just being on Adam's email list is great. I love your little Adamisms. I keep a running note in my phone of all of my favorite sayings that you have, and your emails are ones that I always look out for. So anyone who's listening who may be on the fence or just wants to check out more, I highly, highly do recommend checking out mybodytutor.com and just getting on the email list if you're not even looking for a coach, but just there's so much to learn out there. So thank you for everything that you do, Adam, and thank you for being here today.
All right, humans, that's that. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation with myself and Adam Gilbert. I tried to really keep this very topical and very practical. I didn't want to dive into the actual nutrition science, but really stay more on the habits, the MPH, as Adam called it. So I hope you got a lot of value out of this. If you did, if this helped you in some way, please take a moment to share it with a friend. Send this to a family member, a coworker, a friend that you believe it will help. And if you really want to help me grow, you can take a few seconds to leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Until next week, stay healthy, stay happy, my friends.